Well, I just extolled the clasp to trepan the top of the head with an inch and a half Forstner bit and sterilized spoons to remove whatever they possibly might know about affirmative action or think they know and heave it away. So I can start with a tabula rasa, right, blank slate, and talk to you about what affirmative action actually is. Affirmative action is one of those topics that everybody is confused about. What they heard is from people with a vested interest in telling you what a terrible thing it is and that it's unfair and it's reverse discrimination and all that other crapola, whatever. But I'm here to tell you that you're living in an environment where you already are surrounded by affirmative action. The only affirmative action that you ever decide to complain about is the one with employment, and where certain protected groups get some, quote, unfair advantage, which is not really the correct outlook at all. But Dr. Fox, what do you mean I'm surrounded by affirmative action? Well, I'm telling you, you are. Affirmative action exists all in many, many of the institutions that we have. Most obvious are in educational facilities. What do you know about the School of Science and Math down in Durham? Anything? Who goes there? Yeah, well, my older son went there, and sometimes I wonder about that. He never learned how to close the door to his room. When you close a door, you don't just pull it shut, right, which means you hit a little resistance when it gets to the latch, and then when the latch gives way, the door slams. Bam! Right? Because what you do is turn the handle down, pull the latch in, close the door carefully, let the latch up, right? How much brain power does it take to get to that? If that had been on the test for science and math, he wouldn't have come close to it because he never learned that in however long it was before we shipped him out to science and math. Anyway, what's the deal on science and math? How is that an affirmative action institution? It's political affirmative action. What does that mean? Every county in the state of North Carolina sends two kids, one boy, one girl, from every county, as I understand it. Why did they do that? Because all the counties pay for it through their tax money. People pay taxes, and that goes to the School of Science and Math, along with all the other public institutions here in North Carolina. And they use a boy and a girl because it used to be that they wanted to give girls affirmative action in science and math. Probably not necessary now, in my opinion. But they do it anyway. So a boy and a girl from each county go down to science and math and have a two-year educational process there. It's all free. It's pretty cool. Another educational institution that's worth thinking about from the point of view of affirmative action is affirmative action at MIT and also Caltech. They have affirmative action for a group, and you're in that group. That group is Americans. Why do they have affirmative action for Americans at Caltech and MIT?
They have such a large international population.
Exactly. And if they didn't save 80% of the positions for Americans, we all being substantially lower scoring, let's just say it that way, than the kids from Pakistan, and the kids from China, and the kids from India, and the kids from Uruguay, Paraguay, and all the various other places where smart kids come from, right, would cram that school stock chock full of non-Americans. So they saved 20% for foreigners and 80% for Americans, regardless of what their scores are. And that's affirmative action. And one other, since we're up there in the Northeast, what about Harvard? They have affirmative action, too. They accept one group of students almost regardless of what their various scores are because they want them in the mix because it serves the organization's best interests. What is it? Applicants who happen to be their parents went there, right? So we have affirmative action for students whose parents went to Harvard. Why do they do that?
So they get more money.
They can get more money through the endowment program. Oh, they took little Johnny, right? I think I'll send him a check for $100,000. Whatever. Did I tell you about my friend George at University of Pennsylvania? He got kicked out. Disappeared, which was no surprise, the slightest, about the least academic kid I ever met. All right, there we are at UOP, and George is a good guy. If you want to have a party, George is there to have a party with you. So he's a pretty good guy. I liked him. Well, one semester he disappears. He's been kicked out of school for his straight F grade point or whatever it was, probably straight Fs. Next semester he's back. George, you're back. He said, oh, yeah, I'm back. Of course I'm back. There's a huge limousine outside. He came from a really wealthy family. A huge limo parked in front of our townhouse. And George comes in, you're back. Yeah, I'm back. And I said, well, how'd you pull that off? Oh, Dad called him up and made a substantial contribution to the alumni fund. I'm here. And whatever. I said, how much was it? This is 1965, maybe? $50,000. Got him back into school. Yeah, that's just the way these things are. So what we're looking at here is for affirmative action at Harvard means that the alumni children are going to get preference when it comes to SAT scores. As a average SAT scores is like 1280 for the alumni kids. Right?
Seriously?
Yeah.
I'm smarter than Harvard alumni.
There you go. There you go. Alumni kids. Right? And then...
Alumni kids. Excuse me.
And then the kids that are not alumni children score in the 15s. You know,
yeah.
15s.
Smarter.
It just depends on what you want to count as smart, you know. Harry scored really well on those tests. In eighth grade, he's got like a 1480. But is he smart? Depends on what you mean by smart. He never could figure out how to close the door to his room, for God's sake. So people have all different types of smarts. So my point is that we have affirmative action for groups all across this nation, but the only complaints are ever for things like employment. But we do have affirmative action, point one. Point two is that affirmative action only applies to very limited job situations, employment situations. And those are companies that have government contracts. Affirmative action only applies, all right, 99.5% of the time apply to government contracts.
The firms with government contracts.
Precisely. And let's say you have a contract with the government to construct hammers. And you'll get these specifications from the government on what they want. They want a certain type of hickory handle. They want a certain type of steel. They want the head beveled so that you don't peel off little corners that fly into people's eyes. They want the claw to be able to handle a certain amount of pressure. And they want the wedge to be made out of a certain type of steel so when you bang it into the handle, it closes and spreads out the handle and holds it in the head very snugly. And part of that contract is that you mirror the relevant labor market with your workforce. The workforce that manufactures our hammers needs to mirror the relevant labor market. And that is what affirmative action is. Affirmative action is the requirement for government contractors to mirror the relevant labor market across their hierarchy of jobs. Pretty straightforward. It's not really too complicated to go over how this is done, but let's talk about it for a minute more. It's simply a stipulation. If you had to build a road or a bridge, there'd be stipulations about the concrete, about the steel, about the lighting systems, about all kinds of stuff, paint, all that stuff. Stipulations as to how you go about constructing this road or bridge or toll booth or whatever it might happen to be that the government wanted built, a tank, whatever. They also stipulate that they want you to mirror the relevant labor market for those levels of jobs. Okay, so that's the overall concept. This is promulgated through Executive Order EO, write it down, Executive Order EO 11246. Executive Order EO 11246, 1965. Executive Order 11246. 246 stipulates that the government contractors will mirror the relevant labor market. Now, you say to yourself, but Dr. Fox, executive orders have to be extensions of existing regulation laws. How is mirroring the relevant labor market an extension of an existing law? Well, I'm fortunately here to explain that to you. And here's how it works. And fortunately, you're here to hear it. So what happens here is, back in 1948, do you hear the question mark in my mind? I'm not really sure, but late 40s. You can just say 48 and I'll take it. Or late 40s, I'll take that too. The government decided that they should pass a regulation, a law, about the nature of contracts that they let out to contractors. And basically what it said, amongst other things, was that the contract will go to the low-cost bidder. You probably already know that. Government contracts go to the low-cost bidder, as per this regulation from the late 1940s. Okay, so what's that have to do with mirroring the relevant labor market? The crux of the matter. Right? How do these two things fit together? Well, let's go back to when we talked about illegal discrimination. Remember, we had a relevant labor market with qualified applicants in it. If we decide that we only want to hire men, what happens to the number of qualified applicants in that relevant labor market? Well, we would like to think it gets cut in half, but they lose the women. It may be half, there may be more, there may be less than half, but it gets cut. So we lose potential employees. Is it possible that some of our best employees could have been in that group that gets cut for non-job related reasons? Yes, sirree, Bob. It sure does. So then what happens if we decide that they all should look like Calvin Klein models? Tall, fair-haired, maybe curly-haired guys with nice square jaws and a day or two of stubble on their face, maybe round glasses, granny glasses type of guy, looking, gazing into the future with a beautifully ironed shirt on and matching Bermuda shorts, or whatever they're called. Your typical Calvin Klein guy from some years ago, I guess. Who the hell knows? Anyway, if they want all their employees to look like that, what are we at now in terms of representation out of the relevant labor market for qualified applicants? We're down to practically nil. So the possibility of finding the very best employee gets hurt badly. And what happens to the cost of hiring these perfect people? Is it going to go up or down? Are they a restricted resource? It's going to go up. Just like if I said, I'm going to close the doors and start pumping air out of this room. We're going to create a perfect vacuum in this room. What's going to happen to the price of a small scuba tank that I happen to have in my back pocket? It's going to go way up, right, as people are trying to grab their wallets and get out as much money as they can to buy this little scuba tank or beat the bejesus out of me and steal it. Whatever. You get the idea. The value of the resource has gone up. And if you say we're only hiring beautiful men out of the relevant labor market to fill this job as whatever, right, the price is going to go up. It's a scarce resource. So this is an exact violation of the idea of the low cost gets the contract, right? You're making the cost higher by hiring more expensive labor, and you're making it very highly likely that you're not getting the best people. So the cost of producing this product, as whatever it is, the hammer or whatever, has obviously gone up. So affirmative action builds on the concept that you must mirror the relevant labor market, looking for the very best people out of the relevant labor market. I know, there's an inherent conflict. What happens then if representation doesn't actually qualify, does not actually mean that you get the very best employee? If you can quantify that and show it to be true, then you're accepted by the affirmative action people, which we'll talk about in a minute. So this is their goal. Their goal is to reflect the relevant labor market at the various levels in your organization. In terms of affirmative action as well as equal employment opportunity, there's 7 levels in your organization, 7, right? At the bottom is unskilled labor. At the top is executive, right, executive. So in the middle, mid-level management, office clerical type of work would be probably 3 or 4, et cetera. So we have these 7 levels that need to be measured. Each one of those, of course, has a different relevant labor market, progressively larger as you move up the skill levels in the 7. So at the bottom, unskilled labor will be a small relevant labor market, executives, a large relevant labor market, and you need to mirror the relevant labor market for the appropriate job. If you think it's been a little bit dull at this point, please stay with me, because we're about to plunge into the depths of dulldom. But I'll do my best. In order to investigate this, we have an agency called the OFCCP. The OFCCP. Office. They can draw little arrows pointing to each letter. Office, federal, contract, compliance, program. OFCCP. Office, federal, contract, compliance, program. Did you do little arrows? No? You just wrote it, figured it out later. You wouldn't be confused. Good. I'm just trying to be remedial here, helping out people who might be a little bit wondering about what's going on. Okay. The Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs is going to investigate whether or not your company is correctly mirroring the relevant labor market, which is to say, is the company in parity, P-A-R-I-T-Y? Are you in parity with the relevant labor market? By the way, why am I subjecting you to this? Do you think as working for a company, you'd be interested in having a government contract?
Yeah.
What do you think? Why? Because they pay a lot, right? Regardless of the fact that they're trying to get the low-cost bidder, government contracts are very underlined lucrative. That means they get you a lot of money. Moolah, long green, coin of the realm, etc. come out of government contracts. You want government contracts, so you need to understand affirmative action. Okay, and here's how we look at parity. All right, get your toothpicks under your eyelids to hold them open, okay? In terms of a parity investigation, OFCCP. Now remember, here, we're to mirror the relevant labor market for each level in the organization. And when they say mirror, basically they're talking about two groups. And those two groups are gender, you know, male, female, and race. And race runs, you know, Asian, Samoan, white Anglo, whatever. Any race that you can have. American Indian, right? American, Native American, etc. So race covers not just black and white, but all the various races that constitute 2% or more of the population in that relevant labor market. 2% or more. I know, your head is about to hit the desk, but just hang in there. It's reasonably important. All right, so we're talking about 2% or more representation for a race. For example, in California, lots of Samoans, people on guest visit. Well, I can tell you a cool story anyway. Guest visitors, people who are just visiting, students, et cetera, from Samoa, and people who have moved there and become American citizens. There is an American Samoa, after all, so they just moved there. My son decides when he's living in Palo Alto, he wants to play rugby. He's always into these contact sports. Even as a kid, he wanted to wrestle. I hate that stuff. Anyway, wants to play rugby. So he looks in the paper for rugby teams that are meeting. He says, oh, look, one's meeting over at the rec center on Saturday. He goes over, and it's a bunch of Hispanic guys. And he says, I want to play. And they say, okay, suit up, get out here. He realizes right away that these are not Hispanic guys, these are Samoans. And these guys are freaking huge. He's big. He's like 6'4", maybe 2 at the time, 225, 230. He's a big guy, really solid. He says running into those guys is like running into a brick wall. They don't even move. They just stand there and you don't go anywhere. You just hit them and that's it. Bounce off and fall down. So anyway, but he loves doing this stuff, and he likes all the guys. He's, you know, Mr. Macho with all these guys. It's so much fun, you know, blah, 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 blah. And eventually he says, Dad, Dad, we're getting to the Nationals. We're playing for the National Championship for pickup teams in rugby around the nation. It's East Palo Alto. They have a name, like the East Palo Alto Dragons or some such, whatever. Right? And evidently they get the championship every year because it's a bunch of kids that come over on student visa or tourist visas and just come over to play rugby. That's what they do. And they all live, like 15 or 20 of them live in one house in East Palo Alto and play rugby for the entire time they're there. They just go crazy over this. So anyway, they're going to the championships. He says, it's going to be on ESPN 8 or whatever it is. I don't know how many there are. But I don't even get one if we don't get cable. So somehow I have to find it, and I eventually find it on the TV in here or something. And the game's on. So I'm saying, oh, maybe Aaron's playing. This is great. I can't wait. And they're showing the camera, and then eventually they get to the bench. And there's Aaron on the bench, not even suited up. Oh. They didn't even let him suit up. But he's on the team, and he's sitting there, right, cheering the team on. So eventually when he quit the team, when the rational kid's going to quit at the end of the season, he learned a speech in Samoan. Mountain? I don't know what the language is. But he gave him a big speech in Samoan, which was pretty cool. I thought it was pretty cool to memorize the speech about the fun he had. And now he sees all the guys working at Home Depot. They're about half of them work at Home Depot for some reason or another. Anyway, so race then is all these various groups that constitute at least 2% of the relevant labor market population. Male, female, we pretty much understand that. And what happens here is that the Bureau of Labor Statistics, using census data, puts together what's known as availability. Availability. So let's say, for example, the availability for mid-level managers, we're looking at mid-level managers. And we look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics in a category of mid-level managers for the appropriate relevant labor market, which might be, if it was in here in Boone, it might be from here down to Charlotte. People would either commute or move to take a mid-level management job here. So a big circle around Boone that reaches to Charlotte, out past Johnson City. So this might be that of a total population that could be mid-level managers, there might be, I don't know, let's just say 10,000 total. And of that, there might be 3,000 are women. Just any number. I'm just taking numbers. Doesn't make any difference. So that is what's known as availability. Right? So these are women. This is total. Men and women. So in the relevant labor market, we have essentially a 30% representation of women, right? Qualified women in the relevant labor market for mid-level managers. Now, we look at utilization. This is in the company. unionization in company. At mid-level manager job, mid-level MGT, in the organization, they have 100 total mid-level managers. 100 total mid-level managers. Okay. And they have, then they have 15 women. Okay. So what do we see here? Boil this all down. In parity equals utilization divided by availability. Do you want to give me a number?
50%?
Pretty much has to be, isn't it?
Not enough.
So what we have here then is a yield of 50% here, and this falls below a number that we talked about before, which is
80.
You missed one crucial element. 0.8. Right. 0.8. So that's the adverse impact number, right? Four fifths rule, blah, 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 blah. Yes, it is. So what we're looking at here is 50% is less than 0.8, right here, less than that. So consequently, the company is not in parity. They're in violation of the requirement. Just if you twist the whole thing sideways really hard, no, that way. Put two hands on it. Yeah, take it like this and just bend it like this until the thing snaps off and lay it on the floor. It's always in the way. Always in the way. Yeah, that's pretty good like that. Did you see that Halloween costume? It was in some magazine Jody got out of the bookstore. This is really cool. You take a T-shirt and you cut a hole in the front like this and a hole in the back. And then you put a flat screen monitor, iPad, in the front and in the back with the forward cameras on both ways. So looking at it from the front, you just see what the one in the back is seeing, which is the area behind the person. And then from the back, you see what's in front, which is a person looking at it going, oh, my God, is that cool or is that cool?
That is
really cool.
They have a development of that idea that's in Japan, I think. It's like, you know, the invisibility cloak in Harry
right.
Potter. It's the same basic idea where it takes a screen in it, and the entire front thing is a screen.
It's screen. It hides you completely.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah.
Kind of interesting.
It's like that guy that had his hideout house where he could go when the world comes to an end and there's no more anything anymore. He's got this house that he built with covered in mirrors. And so it's up in a tree, and it's, so it's like 15 feet off the ground, and it's in a forest, obviously, covered with mirrors. So it's really, it's just reflecting trees all over, and so it's very hard to see.
Genius.
The whole kind, that was kind of genius, too. I'm not sure about the end of the world concept, but at least the house is genius.
He's prepared.
He's prepared, yeah. Prepper.
As long as the mirrors don't break.
Huh?
As long as the mirror
yeah, nobody casts a stone in at the mirror. Yeah. All right, so what we have here is a violation because they're under 80%. 0.8, right? Okay, so that is the utilization divided by availability to give us an investigation of parity. All right, what happens if they're low? What happens if it comes out like this? The final step is the fourth point, which is known as goals and timetables. Goals and timetables. This was roughly half a semester discussion in my grad class at Virginia Tech. That's how much time we spent on it. We did a number of these for companies. All right, so what we have here is goals and timetables. Goals and timetables says at each level where you're in violation of mirroring the relevant labor market, what do you intend to do? Company says, of course, we're going to bring the company up to parity, which is 0.8. Perfect parity would be what, by the way?
0.1.
1, right. But they give you the same slack that you get with an adverse impact plan. So that's our goal. And our timetable is how we're going to go about getting our numbers up to where they need to be to mirror the relevant labor market. You may not fire people and hire others. That doesn't count. You're not, they don't expect it, and they don't expect you to hire people who are not competent either. So that's the concept of mirroring the relevant labor market, and you would do this analysis at all seven levels. Well, if they have all seven levels in the organization. But this investigation then gets you a shot at a second government contract. If you fail to get your company into parity at the levels by the time the contract's up, then you'll have a harder time getting the second contract. But if you get your numbers right and everything looks good, then you have a shot at getting a second contract, etc. But there's no punishment per se. It's not like a lot of these things where there's punishment. But affirmative action doesn't have a problem except the idea of being left out when it comes to getting second government contract. Government contract. There we go. Got it. All right, so that's affirmative action, and that's what it is. Remember, this is only applying to people who have government contracts. I'll tell you a little bit more about the other 3% of these next time we get together. See you Thursday, alligators. It'd be a good idea to form a study group, or at least a group that's going to do your bonus test together. And it might be the group that you write your term paper with. It's on the S drive.